Hello, welcome back to Unreal Bluegrass. I'm Steve Martin. This portion of our show, we're going to talk to Ricky Meyer, a very accomplished, pretty much self-taught banjo player. He has great instincts and great ideas about what he's going to play and how to teach you how to play it. He is on a new album, Full Chord. He's playing banjo with Full Chord in our brand new album, Cambium. Stick around. I think Ricky Meyer's a pretty cool guy. You're going to like him. To the audience of Unreal Bluegrass, you just heard a splendid, splendid cut called Logan's Farewell. It's on an album, Full Chord, which is released just in November of this year, 2023. Full Chord, the name of the album, is Cambium. And I have on the phone right now a banjo player who's playing I've admired for some time. And when I received this Full Chord CD, I recognized now I get a chance to talk to Ricky Meyer. Ricky, I'm really happy to get a chance to talk to you and kind of get some insight as to what you do and how you play and all that. You do so many things with this album, with YouTube, with all sorts of teaching things. But Ricky Meyer, welcome so much to Unreal Bluegrass.
Hey, Steve, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So the tune we played, Logan's Farewell, I picked that out. There are two instrumentals on the entire album of 12 cuts. It's on Dark Shadow Records. So this is, I figured this was yours. Ricky Meyer, you wrote it on Banjo Daddy Publishing, and it's just an instrumental and shows off a little bit of your banjo playing. So they've heard that. The audience has now heard that. So I thought we would talk about that a little bit and get into your style and some other things from that. And we'll come back to the album as we go through.
Well, Logan's Farewell is a driving banjo tune that I actually wrote shortly after I moved to Boston to attend Berklee College of Music. It's just one of those tunes that is very natural and easy to play on the banjo. You know, dare I call it a banjo tune? But it's a lot of forward rolls, it's a lot of backwards rolls. It's actually like, I think it's like four or five parts. But I was just on a composition spree, and this is a tune that just kind of naturally came out of me. I mean, the A part, like,
I would recognize it anywhere. If someone
you recognize it anywhere. But that's just something that's really natural and easy to play on the banjo. I am partial to minor keys. I just think they're very beautiful and not played enough in bluegrass, and so I've always really liked just like driving, just like minor banjo. It's a lot of fun. And the B part has like a, you know, some hints of Tony Trischka technique. The C part is actually kind of where I got the farewell idea. I actually copped it as like bum, 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 bum from this tune called Elzik's Farewell. It's kind of like an old time song.
Okay.
But I just like threw just a banjo roll on it and I thought it sounded kind of nifty. But yeah, I wrote it like right when I went to Berklee College of Music. There's this guy who grew up in the same county as me. And he was a really strong guitar player, and now he's a famous Nashville cat. His name's Logan Ledger.
Okay.
And he and I found out, even though we're from the same town, we found out that we were going to go to Berklee College of Music during the same semester. I was like, whoa, that's so cool! Like we're going to be buddies. We're going to be like we're going to hang out and play all the time. I was like, oh my god, it's so cool! And then just like a few weeks after he and I moved to Boston, he's like, you know, I'm not into Berklee. I'm moving.
Oh.
And then he just got up and left. And it was at the same time that I had learned this tune, Elzik's Farewell, and I was writing this like this long banjo tune. And so I was like, I might as well call it Logan's Farewell. It just kind of stuck.
It's a great tune. I'm always jealous. I'll tell the listeners when I and we'll talk a little bit about as much as we want to about Ricky's YouTube adventures, of which there are many. Ricky's the kind of player that when I see him play and I get my finger picks out. And I walk and I go patiently out to the driveway and I just stomp them flat because I know I can't do what you're doing. It sounds destructive, but really it's not because I'm recycling because the magpies and the crows pick them up and take them to their nest. So that's my reaction to hearing you play and seeing you do things on YouTube is just, in all seriousness, is just, wow, what a great inventive player. And you have so much thought behind what you're doing. I don't really stomp on my picks, but sometimes I want to when I see what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, I hope I don't make you want to stomp on your picks. I mean, if there's anything that I like doing,
I won't do it. I won't
don't do that.
Nah.
I mean, if there's one thing that I really like doing, it's just inspiring the banjo community.
I put
a lot of thought. I mean, it seems like a lot of my, like, you know, it's kind of weird, like, looking back at, like, I was a full-time performer when I was in Boston, and then I left Boston after 7 years. I thought I was going to take over my dad's construction company. And then I started YouTubing, But it's just kind of the way my mind is framed. I mean, you're a lawyer, and I've always kind of gotten along with lawyers. My grandfather's actually a lawyer.
Oh, good.
And it's just like the way my mind is framed is like very logical and kind of like engineering and like systematic. And then, you know, it seems like my whole musical existence almost, like ever since I really got into De La Fleck, has been just like reverse engineering. Like, how does he do it? And I'm not the strongest musician. Like, I think a lot of people have much stronger ears than me. But for some reason, I've been really attracted to this rhythmic style that De La Fleck does. And, you know, I was actually going to be a nurse, and I took, like, this anatomy class, and this anatomy class introduced me to all this, like, technical nomenclature that was very logical, regular, and systematic. And then I started, like, applying that a little bit to, like, the banjo techniques that I was kind of reverse engineering from De La Fleck. And it's all that, and I also have a fascination with linguistics. So all those things combined have kind of like led me to just inventing a lot of banjo theory, which has kind of been the foundation of my YouTube channel, because I am just opinionated about how I like to play the banjo in terms of like what's easy, what is playable, and what is improvisable. And even though I made a lot of videos on my YouTube channel describing this theory, people want to know, like, well, what does it sound like? Why don't you make some music? And this album is actually, it's a great, it has a lot of examples of the style of banjo that kind of are, like, rendered from my body of theory, is
okay.
One way to put
yeah,
it.
Sure. Okay, so you're using the rigor of what you learn, let's say, in a classroom setting or maybe in a particular study, of anatomy or whatever, so that and the logic of what I think it is, Ricky, is the logical approach to things as far as when you say backwards engineering or reversing it. It's
yeah.
because you know there's a logic that has to get there, and anything you know from having studied him and done so much, it, you know, Bale is a really logical guy. Just to the normal person that thinks, where is this coming from? But if you study it and understand it and can express it the way you do, which you do. On the YouTube channels, which I listened to, you were the first one to you put one of Bela's songs, I believe, one of the tunes from My Bluegrass Heart on YouTube, and I made sure I saved that so I could go back and find it and watch it again. I'm pretty sure it was you.
I haven't done any songs off My Bluegrass Heart.
Oh, okay, all right. Maybe it's another tune that he did. But anyway,
I've done a handful of his solos. I think his Freeborn Man solo. But I mean, the thing about Bela, even the banjo is just a really complicated instrument. Unfortunately, and like I can't tell you how many hours, I mean years, I've wasted trying to play something that's just easy and natural and improvisable. And it's just melodic banjo, for instance, like a lot of that stuff relies on muscle memory and not necessarily intuition.
Yeah, okay.
And just like strength of your spirit, being able to like translate that. And like even though like Bela is a logical guy, and I think he's very orderly. But at the same time, I think he's very expressive, and there's just some very beautiful like confluence of De La Fleck's character and also his mind that come through his banjo playing. Because unfortunately, the banjo it is like the 5-string banjo in the style is unfortunately like very technical, and it's hard to play from like that intuitive and primal place. And that's the kind of thing that I've just kind of like dedicated my life to figuring out. How to do.
So, well, I'll say this. I thank you for what you're doing on YouTube. I watch and I realize that there's things going on that if I sat and really listened, you explain things very well. I'm talking to Ricky Meyer, but the album Full Chord, the brand new Full Chord album, Cambium, which, by the way, has nothing to do with human anatomy, the name of it.
Sure, it's more tree anatomy.
It's a plant. It's a plant, part of a plant. But I've enjoyed watching your stuff, and I've enjoyed your playing. And this album gave me the opportunity really to kind of talk to you about it. And you're doing a really good job of expressing it. I want to pull back to, before we talk more about your style and your development, which we will. This album has 12 cuts on it. I can rattle off the members of the band: Brian Oberlin on vocals and mandolin.
Eric Langyong.
Langyong's on vocal and guitar. Grant Flick, fiddle. Ricky Meyer, banjo. Todd Kirchner on bass. And then there's a Katie Kirchner who does guest harmony vocals on a couple tunes. Great album. And so tell me a little bit about the creation of this album, how you're not all the same. I'll say this. These are traditional sounding tunes, but they don't always have not every bit of the playing and the production is traditional. Does that make sense? I mean, in other words, anybody can listen to these, we'll say, except Reeling in the Years, which is not a traditional bluegrass tune. But all of these have that sound that could be recognized as a traditional format, but the playing within them and what you're doing doesn't always follow what we would expect from a traditional, whatever that means, bluegrass tune. Is that safe to say?
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah.
I mean, when I listen for the playing and I listen for the instrumentation and the tunes are great. I mean, it's a great album. How long of Full Chord? You mentioned off the air it was like three albums. Have you done three albums with Full Chord, or is this your first one?
No, this is my first one.
Okay.
I mean, it's kind of a funny story. I mean, Full Chord, they won the Telluride Bluegrass Band Contest in 2022, I think it was, and then. They've had a few banjo players, and some of the banjo players just like wouldn't stick. At that same time, they got a triple record deal from Dark Shadow Recording with Steven Mogin.
Mm-hmm.
And then so they were really kind of hard pressed to find a banjo player. They were reaching out to a lot of people, and they reached out to me. And I kind of understand why, like, a lot of people were saying, like, no, I can't do it, because, like, what they needed was somebody to be on the road, like, full time.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily, in my case, because I mostly work online with my YouTube channel, I had the space to do that.
Okay.
But as far as, like, all the tunes that are on the album, it was just kind of, like, an assignment for me. Like, they send me a handful of tunes, and I just started recording them at my house and started messing around on them to get my ideas a little more clear as far as, like, what I wanted to play.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was kind of a separate deal than just actually being in the band and touring with them. And then I had to figure out, you know, like, they've got, like, 60, 70 songs or something like that that we would play from, and learning that was a whole different ordeal. But the whole idea of doing the album, it was already pretty much done and ready to go by the time they wanted me to play on it. There were no questions about what the songs were going to be. So I just had to learn them, show up and play them.
Okay.
And it's funny because a lot of the songs that we play on the album, we didn't perform live.
Really? You mean you still don't? Is the band touring? Is there a tour schedule? Let's do this. I always like to cover if the band or you, let's say, start with Full Chord. Do they have a website where people could find out what they're doing, where they're going, and where they can buy these things?
Yeah, you can find out about Full Chord's shows at fullchord.net.
Okay, good.
B-O-R-D, like a cord of wood.
Yeah, okay, as opposed to C-H-O-R-D. So,
yes, yeah.
So this CD, and I guess other ones could be available to purchase either in person. Are you shut down for tour-wise right now, or are you still doing things through the end of 2023?
I'm not playing with Full Chord right now. They got a few subs.
Okay.
But they're playing. They got a few shows in December. That's all. That's it, as far as I understand.
Okay. All right. Let's talk. So you've been playing a banjo for. Let's start this basically for me. I'm talking to Ricky Meyer. I want to learn about Ricky. The band's great band. This is a great album that we're talking about. But I want to learn about you and when you started playing banjo and why. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
So you go. Tell me what happened.
Okay, well, let's see. It all started when I was in middle school playing the bass. Well, I guess like one of my buddies, I played trumpet in middle school, and the trumpet player I sat next to turned into be like, you know, a close friend, at least, you know, in middle school what friends are. And I would hang out at his place, and he played guitar, and I was like, oh, cool, like, I'll play bass. And then like one of my other buddies was like, oh, cool, I'll play drums. So like every weekend we would get together and play Crazy Train. So I learned how to play Crazy Train on the bass. Like, and that was my introduction to tab and learning how to play. So that was eighth grade, and we would play Crazy Train every like Friday and Saturday. We would just go to my buddy's house, Patrick, and just like play and then skateboard around. But I thought I was super good. And then going into my freshman year of high school, I got a phone call. There was going to be a new music teacher, and the person asked on the phone was like, "There's going to be a new music teacher, and there's going to be a performance workshop class, and we're inviting guitar players, drummers, and bassists to join. Would you like to join?" I was like, "Well, I play bass. So yeah, I'd like to join." They're like, "Great. Would you like to be in the intermediate, beginner, or advanced class?" And I was like, "Well, I'd certainly like to be in the advanced class." And then so, like, even though I had never had any music lessons in my life.
I was going to say, so you have no musical training at this point?
None. Okay. No, eighth grade, absolutely none. And then in, like, my first day of freshman year, I'm put into a music class with a bunch of kids, students, that had been taking music lessons their whole life.
Oh, geez.
You know, they could play piano, they could play guitar, they could sing. You know, a lot of them were aware of jazz. And then at that same time, my music teacher, John Mattern, he this is his first year teaching at Redwood High School in Corte Madera, California. He was like, oh, you know, every 10 years my family goes on a sailing trip. And so I need to take the first 3 weeks off. And the school was like, okay. So for the first 3 weeks, there was a substitute teacher, and it was just absolute chaos in the class. And so there was a substitute teacher. The teacher would just, like, make sure people were there and would just hang out and not do anything. And so, like, in that chaos, I, like, picked up a guitar. People showed me how to play. Like, I learned how to play. Like nobody knows you when you're down and out, but Eric Clapton. I learned how to play Blackbird. You know, I learned how to play a blues on the bass. I learned how to play a handful of things, but it was the finger-picking on guitar that I really liked, like Stairway to Heaven. It was that stuff that came really natural to me. It was in that class somebody taught me Cripple Creek on the banjo, and that summer of my freshman year, I took my mom to the music store and said, Mom, look what I can do, and I played her Cripple Creek and then took the banjo down and didn't think anything of it. And then that summer of my freshman year, my mom just brought me home a cheap $50 Rover banjo, and I brought that to sophomore year, and in that music class, me and my friend started this band called the Itchy Mountain Men. And then that band started getting booked by the mandolin player's dad pretty aggressively, and then we were just like playing nonstop, basically. And that's when I discovered Table Edit, and that's when I got into the Banjo Hangout archives, and really how I learned how to play banjo is just like browsing the Banjo Hangout archives, downloading all these tabs, playing them in Table Edit. And in Table Edit, you can hear like what like songs sound like.
Take a minute, Ricky, because I know what you're talking about, because I've struggled through that. But maybe you've already explained it all that we can, but talk a little bit about that program.
Table Edit is a free tablature software. Being in high school, I didn't have a credit card. I wasn't going to pay for anything. But it's a free tabbing software that just allows you to like basically make sheet music for fretted instruments. And there's an advantage to tab as opposed to standard notation, because you can see what the right-hand pattern is and what the left-hand pattern is. Regular notation doesn't let you do that. And somebody like me who doesn't have the strongest ear, it really allows – it's kind of like a bicycle for the mind. It just allows you to go a lot further. And like that tabbing software, like in 2005, 2006 – when I was in high school, I was able to download just all these banjo tabs. And this is, I never really listened to bluegrass, like I played bluegrass, but one thing that I found is I would just download all these tabs. And what I found is that there are these tabs by this guy, Bela Fleck, that were they always sounded better,
yeah.
And they were always easier to play than other tabs.
Interesting.
And then like I got into the Fleck tones, but even like the banjo stuff was still like over my head. And I was learning how to play it by tab, but really, like, I was actually a slap bass player at heart, and I think I still am. But it was Victor Wooten and Future Man and, like, Bela Fleck and Howard Levy, but, like, those guys, the way they made music was just, like, special. And there were, like, almost no tabs for that stuff, so I was at a loss to play it because my ear wasn't that good, my voice wasn't that good, and I couldn't really transcribe stuff. But it was just, like, being exposed to that Table Edit and being in the high school music class and just learning how to jam that really kind of put me on a track of just like, this is just like, it just like consumed me. I just obsessed with it. So that's kind of how I got started.
So, well,
if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It does. I think a lot of us have gone through that process. That came about long after I had Earl Scruggs' book. That's what I had to start with. So many people did. But you've obviously studied music and on your YouTube videos, you talk about some pretty involved musical concepts. I think you do. So somewhere along the line, you figured out.
A lot of the musical concepts in my channel I talk about, I've invented, because I went to Berklee College of Music, and there's just not any theory to describe the kind of banjo playing that I do. And there's also like almost no music theory dedicated to understanding rhythm. And so a lot of like, I feel like the ground that I broke online is the like coming up with a nomenclature to describe all the permutations of the roles. And it really makes playing banjo a lot easier once you understand. It's really not that hard either, but
it's kind of hard.
Like a lot of the stuff that I talk about on my channel, just theory that I invented to describe the style of banjo playing that I like.
Okay. So you've had several I won't say different versions, but you've had different types of YouTube. You know, I think you're doing, I just saw one the other day where, I cannot pronounce the name of this tune that you just played.
Chinkapin.
Yeah, I always get it wrong. Thank you very much. I know the tune. I've seen it. Every time I look at it, I freeze up. So, yeah, you did that, and then you took a walk, which is kind of what you did right before we got on the air here.
Yeah.
So when I first started watching you, they're still available. You're a little bit flashier. There's a lot more stuff going on, and I just felt this is him. This is Ricky, you know, not wanting to blend in with all the other banjo YouTube things and also draw a little bit of attention to it. But now I think that you're, as of that one I just watched the other day, just thinking about the things we could talk about in addition to the album you're playing, it looks like you're not that way anymore. You're help me explain the difference between those very flashy ones and what you're doing now.
For my opinion, it's just more, I'm just like maturing my process.
Okay.
Like when I first started doing it, I lived with this bass player named Charles Bertou, who was really into this bass YouTuber named Davey504. And when I was going to take over my dad's construction company, and then I started YouTubing, and I really only started YouTubing because a handful of things clicked, specifically like Ableton, the program, and making drums, and then video editing. But once all those things clicked, I was like, oh my god, this is going to be hilarious. I'm just going to copy Davey 504 with a lot of like the jump cuts and explosions and comedy. Just because I thought it was, I didn't think it was going to be like my thing. It was going to be like my thing forever. I just thought it was kind of a cute little like art project.
Yeah.
And I just like kind of got carried away with it because I'm actually very just passionate about describing like banjo theory and like how to play banjo. I'm just very passionate about the banjo. And then like I started making these YouTube videos and my buddy was helping me like writing comedy and like I just went over the top with it. And I think a lot of people thought it was interesting, but I think a lot of people were pushed away from it. But it was like, you know, I was young, I was free, I was liberated, I was misled. But now it's like, I think it's less about, and you know, a lot of it was just like so much acting because I was like, you know, you write a script and you make a YouTube video. But now I'm just trying to be much more genuine, much more authentic. Much more generous with my time online, and also just more focused on the music and how I can help people. So the banjo lessons for expert series, it was fun, but I really just feel like I've matured a little bit
and just
trying to put out content that's helpful to people.
It is. It's very helpful. So if someone wants to find you on YouTube, I would just type in your name and find anything else they would need.
Fine. Just looking at my name.
Yeah. Hey, listen, while we're talking. And I like this process we're going through and how you became a banjo player. Let's talk back about the album Cambium and talk about I love the fact that there's a Steely Dan tune reeling in the ears. Talk a little bit about that. Then I want you to introduce it and I'll play it for the audience and we'll come back and talk a little bit more. You wouldn't mind going through that.
So let's see. Reeling in the Ears is a song that Full Chord wanted us to play. Reeling in the Years is actually a song in like in 6/8. Actually, it's like that boom. It's got that kind of groove, but we play it in 4/4, which is like a boom.
You still talk like a slap bass player. Go ahead.
I am fundamentally a rhythm player.
Okay, go ahead.
I think it's because my parents listened to so much disco when I was like growing up. my parents are from, my mom's from San Francisco, my dad's from Mexico City, but they both met a dancing disco, you know, in the late 70s in San Francisco.
Mm.
And on car rides, like my whole life, there's always been just like disco music going on, you know, Donna Summers and things like YMCA, just like blasting. I think it's those like the Pointer Sisters, but it's that beat that like. I think inherently, just somewhere around that tempo is where 16th notes feel the best.
Okay.
And that's where like bluegrass banjo lives the best. Is playing those 16th notes. What does that have to do with Reel in the Years? But Reel in the Years
it's kind of in that
4/4 kind of danceable beat. And the way that I play banjo on it is I'm just like trying to. It's actually kind of like this banjo ascension formula that I talk about on my YouTube channel sometimes. But basically, like me and my buddies, we wanted to invent this app called the Banjo Ascension app. And the app just has a few controls. Like one of them, you can choose the roll pattern, The other one is you choose the chord, and the other one is you choose the chord inversion. And, like, with these parameters, I mean, you can do it in your head, but the program was supposed to just, like, render just banjo playing. Just, like, because the banjo plays, like, you know, all the six beats, it's a lot to think about. But, like, this process really allows, like, the generation of this very crystalline kind of sound. And so in Reel in the Years, I'm like, playing this process, like, over it the whole time. I'm just, like, playing the chords, you know, just kind of switching chord inversions, not to be too technical. But you can hear, I'm just, like, rolling through those chords, and it sounds, like, very banjo-y but sophisticated, but not exactly bluegrass. It's still, like, simple and primal.
Yeah.
But it's not exactly bluegrass, but it is. And I think it's because it's role-based in nature. It's fundamentally like a rhythmic system.
Yeah, okay. So. I think that's a good introduction, too. So we're going to play Reelin' in the Years from Full Chord's new album, Cambium, and we're talking to Ricky Meyer about a very fine album. And Ricky is a very fine banjo player, and I will tell you again, I will give this to you. I've often said this on the air. Years ago, there was a Moody Bluegrass album came out. Great. Everybody was on it. They were playing Moody Blues tunes, which was kind of neat, but it fit. I think you can take this and run with it. There should be an album called Steely Grass. I think we got enough Steely Dan stuff, and we'll surely do after decades of music, to do a nice little bluegrassy Steely Dan. I would put Reelin' in the Years on it, but I would work on it. I think you can make lots of money off of that, my friend. I'm kidding. Nobody can make any money. But I think I like the idea. I've heard other Steely Dan songs done, and I like this one. So we're going to listen to Reelin' in the Years. We'll come back and talk to Ricky Meyer in just a second. So Reelin' in the Years from Cambium, new album from Full Chord. Okay, that was it. I really liked it. I'm a big Steely Dan fan. I'm happy that you did it on there. I like the way you explained it. The rest of the album, we're going to talk about one more tune before we get out of here, but as you described it, pretty much the tunes came to you, and you needed to add in the banjo stuff. Well, let me ask you this then, as a player, how do they know what they're looking for from you? Let's put it that way, because you mentioned that they wanted someone who would travel with them as well as but what were they looking for in your style that they thought would fit if they gave you what in essence became the tunes that are on this new album?
Well, Brian Oberlin, the mandolin player, he's kind of like the band leader and creative director essentially. And I hadn't heard of him, but I was at Telluride in 2022 when I heard the band contest going on, and I heard, like, some banjo playing going on. I was like, whoa, that is some heavy-duty banjo playing. Whoever that is going to win. Lo and behold, they won. I was like, who is that banjo player? And, of course, it was Matthew Davis, who I had met at a Bela Fleck's banjo camp. This, like, young prodigy. Just an incredible young banjo player. He was actually really close with, like, Bela Fleck. And Matthew, he's also really into jazz piano. So he's an incredible mind.
Wow,
really an incredible mind. But he chose to go to seminary school. And so he couldn't do the band with Full Chord. But I thought that it was really cool that they had a banjo player like Matthew in their band, because it showed that they really valued, I guess, chops, musicality,
yeah, okay,
technique,
okay,
prowess,
yeah,
improvisation, you know, avant to grasp.
Yeah.
And I really like that they chose that guy. They also tried to have Gabe Hirschfeld in the band. It didn't work out with Gabe, but Gabe Hirschfeld, like, I hung out with him in Boston, and he taught me, man, like, he was like one of the first banjo players that I'd ever hung out with who really had been taking banjo lessons his whole life and was very aware of, like, all styles of banjo. And I got to hang out with him in Boston a lot and just kind of watch his fingers, and I learned so much from Gabe.
Gabe's a great player, and he has a wicked sense of humor.
Yeah, he's hilarious, man. He's hilarious, yeah. I actually heard him, I heard that he said that, Chris Seeley and Dan Kominsky should start a Seeley Dan cover band and call it Seeley Dan.
I like that.
But if they were going to have Gabe, if they were going to have Matthew Davis, I think I like those players, you know,
sure.
And I thought, like, oh, they want me to be in the band. I think, like, I would fit stylistically.
Yeah, okay. So you felt comfortable doing what you did or giving them these options that you gave them because you knew of what their band had done before and what people had played with them in the past.
So, I think that they just had, like, good taste in banjo players.
I'll second that. Sounds like they did.
Yeah.
Ricky, you've mentioned this Ascension, and I want you to try
Banjo Ascension.
Yeah, let's explain
the Banjo Ascension for me.
Yeah. Explain it a little bit. And I know it's on your YouTube, but you said it. I've seen it. I've seen what you're doing, but try to explain it a little bit.
So the idea is that, there's like David Grisman, he made up a bunch of songs that are very, like, mandolin tunes. They're, like, really easy to play on the banjo. They're really easy to play on the mandolin. And the thing about banjo, and this is, like, you know, been my struggle for my whole life, is, like, there's, like, I'm just, like, a guy who's technical, and I'm very persistent, and I'll learn the stuff, but then you gotta, like, memorize, and that's the only way you can do it. But, like, what is the way to play instruments or music that's, like, easy and primal and natural? And the Banjo Ascension formula is just, like, a body of theory that I've invented kind of over the years to play banjo from, like, a lower and more primal place, not from, like, a really, like, heady theoretical place, even though there is theory to describe it. But the whole point of the theory is to find, like, a natural, easy, and primal place just to, like, drive the five. And a lot of it just comes from, like what was Bela doing in Newgrass Revival, man? What was he doing in the Flecktones that allowed him to play, like, very just, like, soulful, rhythmically driven, and more or less simple, like, banjo stuff over all these chords, all these different time signatures? So the Banjo Ascension formula essentially is, like, pillars three. Like, in order to play banjo in this primal way, it basically comes down to having a nomenclature system for right-hand patterns. That's called the modes of rhythm. The second one is diatonic triple stops, which is just chord scales at the neck. And the third one is called isorhythmation, which is a process that I invented that translates to all of the instruments, but it's basically adding every possible 16th note rhythm to a melody.
Say that word again, and then you explain it, but say the word again.
Isorhythmation is the process of adding every possible 16th note to a melody.
Can you use that in a sentence? Because I'm thinking, I don't know how to spell it, and I'm trying to figure out what
it is. Well, yeah, I mean, you're like a classical guy. Iso is like the Greek prefix for equal, and rhythmate is a verb that I made up to have rhythm.
Well, okay, all right. Well, I would never guess that, classical or not. All right.
Maybe I got to make it more simple.
No, I like it. Leave it mysterious. Leave it that way.
Okay, I'll leave it mysterious. But the idea is you play a melody and you add rolls to it. And this transcends all different types of musical styles. But it's fundamentally the place that bluegrass banjo is invented from. I mean, take it from me, a guy, like, I learned how to play banjo, like, from Tab. And that's not where banjo playing comes from. Banjo playing at, like, Earl Scruggs, J.D. Crow, like, all those guys play the melody and they add rolls to it.
Right.
So the Banjo Ascension formula of modes of rhythm, diatonic triple stops, and then isorhythmation is basically the process by which somebody can invent bluegrass banjo spontaneously. And it comes in handy if somebody's like, hey, man, like, can you play, can you kick this song off? And you're like, I've never heard it before. How does it go? And they're like, bum, 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 bum. And you're like, yeah, sure. You isorhythmate it. You add every possible rhythm to it. And then that's made possible with, like, the modes of rhythm and also, like, diatonic triple stops. But Bela Fleck also does it with, you know, like, jazz stuff. He does it with different time signatures and much more complicated chords. But as far as I can tell, that is the process by which banjo can sound very banjo-y over any style music.
Well, so now the listeners have heard it. That's good. Now the listeners have heard it, and you can find it if you find Ricky. He describes it on his Ricky Meyer on his YouTube things. You can find that and break down what he's saying. And, you know, you should play the tabla. You should be an Indian musician. You should be playing with whatever Bela is touring with now as we speak or whatever.
Zaghir Hussain.
Because what you're doing, when you're doing it, it's like a bass, but it's also like that would translate right over to the tabla or whatever else they're doing for percussion. But that's another thing. You don't want to do that just yet. You have plenty to do with the banjo. I want you to introduce one more tune. I'm going to let you go. I'm keeping you way longer than I should have, but I'm really happy to get a chance to talk to you and explain some of these things. It's a great album, but I want you to maybe introduce, because, and we talked about this a little bit, because the banjo sound on Wild Mountain Rose is a little different than some of the others, and just kind of shows how the banjo can be that very driving force, or it cannot be that very driving force. So tell me a little bit about Wild Mountain Rose, and then we're eventually going to play that for the audience too.
Wild Mountain Rose, that's a tune that Brian Oberlin wrote on his way back from Telluride. And it's a Colorado mountain song, Colorado mountain love song, and they wanted to drive a banjo on it, and that's what I gave them. I don't know, like that kind of stuff, it's very just like in that pocket of like the Newgrass Revival style banjo that I really like playing. Yeah, that's what I think about the song. So anyways, this is Wild Mountain Rose by Full Chord.
And before we do that, great intro, but let me ask you this. When you're not listening to bluegrass, what are you listening to music-wise?
Recently, I've been listening to a lot of slap bass stuff, okay. A lot of Marcus Miller.
Oh, yeah.
I've been listening to Lakeside, like the guys who made the Fantastic Voyage. Listening to a lot of funk music. I recently listened to a podcast on World War II. One of my buddies is a senior executive in the CIA, so I like to listen to things about espionage, so I can have conversations about him, so I can listen to some stories about espionage. Let's see, what else have I been listening to? I've been really getting into UFOs. There's a lot of interesting stuff happening in like the UFO world right now. Let's see, what else do I listen to? Slap bass stuff, man. I love Marcus Miller.
Yep, it's very good. You ever go into jazz, listen to Christian McBride, who's not really slap bass, but I think Christian McBride is the best. He's been on this program before.
Cool.
And I think he's the best. He has different bands. He'll bring out a big band. I've seen him do a thing which he calls his new joint, which is a Philadelphia term. And I think the guy's he learned from Ray Brown, who's kind of like his adopted father in Philadelphia. But I wouldn't say that he's slap bass. A little bit, but I mean, he's a serious jazz. Oh man,
yeah.
but you would love it. Anything that Christian McBride plays, if you're looking for bass sounds, he's whatever you want him to be. But everything he does is like, well, that's the best album I've ever heard.
Yeah, I love Christian McBride. I mean, a band that I've been getting into with a lot of bass is Level 42 with Mark King. That's just like this incredible band. You look them on Spotify. I think they're the number one songs are like It's All in the Family. What is that? Level 42. And they just have just like this incredible. They got to be from the 80s or something.
They
like
are.
That.
They are.
Yeah. Lessons in Love, Something About You and Running the Family. God, it's just like such good like 80s music with just slap bass, and it's just so fun and so danceable. I also listen to a lot of gangster rap. I've been getting back into Mac Dre and Snoop Dogg. Yeah, that stuff. I mean, I just grew up listening to gangster rap, so I do love that stuff. I went through a phase of listening to this Afro-Celtic genre, which is like bagpipes, drums, and bass. You know, it's like ethnic world music, but very danceable. That stuff is just incredible. That's what I listen to when I ski a lot of times. This band, Afro-Celtic Sound System, really, really good stuff.
Yeah, I write all these things down, and I'll go look them up so that I'll learn more. I try to let the audience, I'm talking to Ricky Meyer, I try to let the audience learn from the artist, but I'm trying to learn too as we go, so... I'm making notes of all these things. Let me ask you what kind of banjo we play. We need to always get into that. What are you playing on this album? What do you play?
On this album, I am playing a Robin Smith Bela Fleck copy.
Mm.
So it's basically a copy of Bela Fleck's 1970 or style 75 Gibson. This banjo has a 5-7 compound radius, 5-7 inch compound radius neck, and it's got it's an extra wide neck. Extra jumbo frets, it's like guitar size frets on the banjo. The fingerboard is raised off the head, maybe like an eighth of an inch, so it gives me a little more clearance so my picks don't scratch the head. I think I was playing Hoffmeyer finger picks, blue chip thumb pick, Elliot Smith or Elliot McKinney capo.
Yep.
So that's just the setup. I use extra heavy strings, not extra heavy, but I like my banjo strings are like 11. 12, 14, 22, and 11.
Okay.
So it's heavier, but the banjo buzzed a lot. So it's basically a copy of Bela Fleck's Gibson. And I like the style. I've got to clean it up. It's been a little while since I changed the head. But love the thing. It's hard to find these radius fret banjos. They're just very difficult to make. Since Robin's passing, Robin Smith, since he passed, there's been a compound radius-shaped hole in the heart of America.
I told you off the air, I've just been messing with one myself. I've never had one. Maybe not the same dimension you're talking about. I think it is. I don't know. But it was different for me because I'd never played one. Everything I played had just a flat, you know, regular thing. And so you're very well versed in that. And I do think it's a neat – I'm learning it a little bit. It was a bit of a struggle at first because I thought, where are my fingers? And actually it winds up being – to the listener, if the fretboard is radius, it kind of really gives you a better shot look down if you're looking down at the neck. Not that you should, but it kind of fits. I don't know how to describe it ergonomically, but it kind of fits your hand a little better than the flat thing. I think once you get used to it, I'm getting used to it. But
yeah, I mean the other thing, not only is it like different to play, but because the neck is like those necks tend to be wider, it gives you a darker sound.
Yeah, okay.
But for me, I mean once I went to that jumbo neck with the radius, you know, it's like driving a luxury car. You don't really want to go back.
You can't go back. Yeah.
it's just big. It's like driving a Cadillac. It's just big and luxurious. And it's just nice. It gives you a nice big fat tone. The single string is easier to play. And then your fingers don't tend to run into the other strings and give you muted notes.
You use all the fretboard. I can tell you that. I can tell the listeners that from seeing the YouTube that you make good advantage of places that I would never put my little finger, and you cover all those things with ease. I appreciate your talent. Ricky, I so much appreciate the conversation. I mentioned off the air, I just kind of go where things are and some things I want to know about. We've talked about the album. We've talked about how people can find more of Ricky and how they can find the album. You did a nice setup for Wild Mountain Rose, which I'm going to play now that you've already set it up that way. And then I really appreciate your time, and I appreciate your approach to what you're doing. It's a fabulous the what you're getting and what you're producing is certainly bears out your approach to it. I think it makes perfect sense, and you're really putting out some great music. I hope you have any solo albums out before I let you go.
Yeah, I have two solo albums out. The first one was called The New Age Connection. The next one is called Banjo Daddy Volume 1. Another album to note that I came out with when I was in Boston was this band called Cat and the Moon, and you can find all those on Spotify. And okay. The Cat and the Moon album is just called just that, Cat and the Moon.
Okay. All right, listen, appreciate your time. I'm gonna play for the audience Wild Mountain Rose, and on that I'll find you somewhere down the road with the band or some IBMA that I did not go this year. I just didn't fit in my calendar. I was on the board for 4 years. I used to go all the time, but I couldn't make it this last year. So I knew that there were a lot of things going on with Gold Tone, and I usually stop by and see them, but I wasn't even there at all. So, you know, so there you go. But next time I'll catch you there, I'll catch you some other event. So I hope so.
Wonderful.
All right, Ricky, man, thanks a lot. Here's Wild Mountain Rose from Full Chord's brand new album, Cambium.